The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I want to talk about a serious matter now. If you've got little ears around the radio, you might distract them just for the next 7 or 8 minutes. It's because the Irish Internet Hotline has published their annual report today. And what they found is a massive increase, an over 100% increase in intimate photographs, videos and pictures being taken and shared by children online. Now, these are taken, quote unquote, voluntarily, sometimes under coercion or duress by the children and then shared. And then obviously the experience in a lot of cases is that image itself is subsequently shared with others. It's a story we're going to come back to again later in the show. But right now I want to talk about it to Owen Dolan, who's the principal of Mother of Divine Grace National School in Finglas. Owen, you're very welcome to the show. I mean, have you had to deal with any cases like this in your school, or have any of your colleagues in other schools have to deal with it?
Yeah, well, both myself and other colleagues in other school have been involved in cases where children primary school age, is what we would be talking about, have shared sexually explicit images. It could be sharing of other people, but it has been at times of themselves as well, which is incredibly worrying in this day and age. And, you know, we have a lot of issues with online behaviour. Now, thankfully, in the last couple of years, it has lessened, but it's still an ongoing presence. Like, you know, a lot of time is taken up in schools and in dealing with issues that go on online, which are nearly 100% of the time outside of school hours. So I know we've brought in, known phone policies in schools. And, you know, for me, that's not really dealing with the issue, because these issues don't tend in primary schools anyway. It might be different in secondary schools. Don't tend to happen on the school premises. You do have isolated incidents, but it's when they're in their home environment. And the worrying thing is, for parents, it's very easy to wag your finger at a parent and say, you should be doing this and you should be doing that. But they're under an awful lot of pressure. And unfortunately, the children often know more than us as adults and how to hide such behaviour online. And that's the most frightening thing from my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to confess to a bit of naivety here. When I heard this, I assumed that the overwhelming majority of the cases were going to be maybe 16, 17-year-olds, you know, just about the children. That's not to be dismissive of kind of the importance of that, but I just assumed that would be the age bracket. Over half, they're talking about kids between 4 and 12. So you've seen this with really young kids.
Yeah, like would be very prevalent in all primary schools now that children would have online accounts for various different social media platforms. And when we speak to the parents, always our first line of argument is, look, they're actually legally not entitled to be on these sites for a start. But the children are so inept that if they're using it, I always say to the parents, if they are using a device, try and get them to use in a public space, like in your living room, in your kitchen, where you're at least able to somewhat supervise what they're doing. But, you know, it is prevalent in primary schools now that children will be sharing sexually explicit images, as I said, of themselves and of other items as well. And like, we do try and educate the children in that forwarding on an item is, you know, it's part of the problem as well. Often children don't associate that as part of the problem. Mm. Well, I didn't take the image. I just forwarded it on to someone else. But we all know how chains of events start, particularly if you're dealing with any social media. And I myself am quite naive. And like, the children often would tell me things in school that I would be unaware of. For instance, when the children was using Snapchat and was saying, oh, if I block somebody else, and I said, but you're not able to contact them then. And they said, no, but if two other people put us in a group together and then everyone else leaves the group, then we're left being able to contact. And for me, I didn't realise that, but it just showed me my own ineptitude. And probably if we're talking about most teachers, you know, the children are ahead of us on this. Yeah. And that's the scariest aspect of it.
And when you say that maybe in the last couple of years there's been a slight decline in the number of times they're having to deal with this, I mean, is that kind of a sign of something to be hopeful about or optimistic about?
Probably just a bit of my own local look. Okay. You know, I know from other principals, okay, That's not the case. Sometimes it can happen in cohorts in schools. a certain group of children will be quite active online in a certain class, and then you'll get a class and they won't be very active and they'll maybe be a little bit more innocent, and it can just kind of come. And but the amount of phone calls we get about incidents online, and again, we're always trying to say, look, we can't really investigate them incidents online. We can make people aware if there's obviously damaging or you know, behavior of concern that's going on. We can make parents aware. If we had to make TUSLA aware, the guards aware, we can do that. But it's not our real position to investigate behavior that's going on online. But it happens so often. And the thing that, again, shocks me is that often it's children who would never display that behavior in person. So it's completely different behavior than the behavior they present in school, the behavior they present at home. And that's the real worrying thing about it. And, you know, they can do it so readily and it's so accessible now. And for me, I think that we need to kind of take the bull by the horns and try and educate the children. Banning phones, you know, it solves one problem, but it doesn't really solve everything. Like in our school, we have 60 iPads between 500 children. It's very hard to teach them how to use the technology appropriately if you have that lack of resources. So, and I definitely think as teachers, I speak for myself, but I'm sure I'm speaking for a lot of my colleagues, we need upskilling, because I certainly am not up to date with, you know, a lot of the social media sites that the children are using these days.
Yeah, listen, we're going to come back to this again later in the show. In the meantime, Owen, thanks a million for that, for the insight. Owen Dolan's the principal of Mother of Divine Grace National School in Finglas in Dublin. The internet hotline, who I mentioned there, the state's National Reporting Centre, it's overseen by the Department of Justice and the Gardaí. You can contact the hotline at hotline.ie or 086 811 6273, or you can contact your local Garda station or the free phone Garda confidential line 1-800-666-111 if you have any issues relating to that conversation. Stella O'Malley is with me to discuss, the child psychologist and the author of Cotton Wool Kids, and Rena Maycock, who's the founder of the child cyber safety company Chirp. You're both welcome to the show. Rena, before we talk about Chirp and the service you guys provide, can you maybe catch us up, because you'd be an expert in this area, you know, by way of trying to solve this problem. What kind of platforms are the kids using, and how is this happening by and large?
Well, Kieran, to be frank, it's the increased use of internet-enabled devices, so the explosion in smartphone use. I'm sure you'll have seen and covered on the show. Ofcom recently released their figures, and the figures in Ireland are pretty similar, that 1 in 5 children aged between 3 and 5 have their own smartphone. And of them, you know, 30% of them are using WhatsApp, 31% are using WhatsApp, 23% are using Snapchat. And particularly those platforms are quite dangerous in that they have disappearing messaging functions. They've got hidden chat features. They're encrypted. And that's what children are using these days. I mean, there was a recent study done there in this year, 2025, that found that children as young as 8 were being solicited on the gaming platform Roblox to share explicit content of themselves on via Snapchat. So the issue is becoming much more prolific. I know certainly when I started the company 8 years ago, grooming was a bit of an edge case. You know, if you spoke about online grooming, you might be talking in a room of people and someone might say, oh, my cousin's husband's daughter's school friend, you know, there was an attempted grooming attempt on her or him. Whereas now it's usually one degree of separation. Usually when I go into a room and I talk about Chirp, there's somebody in the room whose daughter or granddaughter or grandson there's been a grooming attempt. And it's also happening on a bit of an industrial scale. You know, if you take sextortion, for example, sextortion is on the rise, and it's usually by organized crime gangs that pose as teenage girls to ask or elicit young teenage boys to share explicit images of themselves, which are then used to threaten and blackmail and extort money from the child. So it's a much bigger problem than it used to be.
Yeah, I have to confess to a bit of naivety in all of this, because when I was reading the annual report earlier, I guess on some level I assumed that an awful lot of these cases would involve, say, you know, people taking photos of their own volition, kids, that the kids would be maybe 16 or 17, you know, just about in the bracket, which isn't to dismiss the importance or the severity of it. But, you know, I thought that's what you're probably, you know, dealing with, kids who are maybe naturally getting to an age where they're starting to explore sex and their sexuality and everything. But over half of them are kids between 4 and 12. We're talking about really young kids.
I mean, look, we'll all remember the case of Alexander McCartney, the 26-year-old computer science student from Northern Ireland that was given a life sentence for the mass sexual abuse online of children from all over the world. And we'll all remember the story of, you know, one of the children that he groomed was a 12-year-old American girl, and she and her father ended up taking their own lives because, and, you know, we were engaging with the UK Home Office and, you know, they were sharing the fact that how he was managing to make such a success of his grooming attempt was he was himself posing as a teenage girl, in some cases where with an eating disorder, and targeting young girls on the likes of Instagram and Snapchat that clearly had eating disorders as well. He would move them into an encrypted app and share an explicit image of himself as a 12-year-old girl nude. And that would lull that child into a false sense of security. And they would then share an image of themselves. Now, you know, once he was successful, he had that process down to 9 minutes from first contact to getting a nude image from a child. And once he was successful, he would then encourage those children or blackmail them into involving siblings as young as 3 in the online abuse. So this is where this is all kind of coming from. It's terrifying.
Listen, I do want to talk about Chirp because it's been a great success and I know recently award winning and all of that. But before I do, let me bring in Stella O'Malley, the child psychologist, who's with us as well. Stella, I kind of always confess to a bit of naivety about this, but maybe I shouldn't because we've had plenty of these reports. And, you know, we should on some level be past the point of talking about the need to educate parents about this type of thing. You know, on some level, there's been so many conversations, yet it seems to still be the case.
Yeah, sometimes something is so weird, we kind of don't want to believe it's true. We kind of shudder, turn our heads away and just think that couldn't be happening and look away. It's easier to think like that. And we kind of instinctively just don't want to think of the darkness of the worldview that this is happening. But it actually is. And children who are very young, prepubescent, you know, who are stumbling onto things and also being targeted, like your guest speaker said, being targeted by predators. And it's horrible when it happens to them. But very often these young kids, it's almost like seeing roadkill. Like they keep on going back to the image. They keep on going back to it. You're trying to get your head around it. And it's kind of shocking and it's kind of illicit. And it's, you know, for the child, nothing sexual is happening. It's just horrifying. And you keep looking at it. And they kind of get lured into kind of all sorts of things that are way out of their depth, that give them a feeling of revulsion, but also a disturbing kind of feeling of they keep watching. It's a really horrible part of the online life. And the more parents engage and realise this is happening, the better.
I'm reminded sometimes in all of these conversations about these kind of old campaigns that would have been run by car manufacturing companies years ago when seatbelts were introduced, wherein they suggested it was going to make kind of people worse drivers, that actually we needed to keep a kind of a burden of responsibility on the driver themselves, you know, so they would have to think about what they were doing. Don't make us put seatbelts in the cars, in other words. Make it all about personal responsibility. There's kind of echoes of that with the tech companies, isn't there?
That's a really good point. The tech companies could, at a flick of a switch today, create an online world where the parents had actual control over their tech in their household. But they don't, because there's a huge amount of money in making it pretty useless. Like parental controls, I'm glad they exist. I'm all for them. But like there's YouTube videos for 7-year-olds about how to get around your parents' control. You know what I mean? So that they're very easy to use videos that are easily available on TikTok, etc., to get around them. The tech companies could make a situation where age verification was essential and it had to go through the parents, where the parents could turn off certain devices, turn them on for 20 minutes and then they self-turn off. There's so much the tech could do, but they're not doing it. They're like the tobacco companies of 50 years ago. They're just keeping their head down and just ching-ching bringing in the money until they one day get forced to take some responsibility over what they've kind of done to this phone-based childhood, which is happening these days.
Yeah, one suspects, like those tobacco companies, that they know that it'll happen eventually and they're making hay while the sun shines from their point of view. Listen, thankfully some people are doing things about it because I mentioned Rena's company as well, Chirp. So Rena, tell us about Chirp, what it does.
Well, it's child protection software for smartphones that detects and blocks cyberbullying, grooming and suicide and self-harm content, specifically in messaging apps and even encrypted apps. It's funny you mentioned seatbelts. I'm actually speaking to you from Geneva. I'm speaking on Friday at the AI for Good Summit, which is the United Nations. And I make that exact point in my speech, Get Out of My Head, Kieran, about, you know, standards, regulators have legislated for protection, you know, really robust safety standards when it comes to seatbelts, when it comes to alcohol consumption, movies, etc. And exactly like Stella says, these companies just simply won't make change until they are absolutely forced to. So it's a really, really important step to force big tech into making these changes. But the unfortunate thing is, if you take the likes of the Digital Services Act, the AI Act, they don't compel companies that have encrypted apps to filter out harmful content because they argue that they can't. So that's where Chirp comes in. So we're an operating system modification at the kernel level of the operating system. And it's at that point we can access all incoming and outgoing data and filter out anything that fails our test. So ultimately what it means is we can, if we detect your child as being cyberbullied, we detect it, slap it, and alert you. If we detect that your child is trying to take or send a nude image of themselves, we'll detect it, discard it, and tell you who they were trying to send it to. Or if your child goes onto a browser and looks for ways to harm themselves, we send you an urgent alert in real time and guidance on what to do next.
And I'm going to ask you about how kind of parents can kind of avail of the software, how they go about it in just a moment. There's an announcement, I think, behind you. I'll let that finish. But Stella, while I wait for that to finish, can I ask you just about, you know, in the meantime, the conversations to have with your children, and maybe it is because you're downloading kind of Chirp or you're accessing that type of software, you want to kind of bring it in and introduce it, you're explaining to kids why. I mean, when you're talking about 5, 6, 7 and 8 year olds, how do you start the conversation? How do you manage it?
Yeah, well, it's worth doing it when they're nice and young like that. So it's an ongoing conversation. It's not one-off. It's a series of conversations. And you're getting buy-in when they're young. You're saying, listen, you know when you see something gruesome like a car accident, you can't unsee it. It sticks in your mind. And for that reason, there's all sorts of adult content. You don't have to be more explicit than that. There's all sorts of adult content that will just freak you out. And I don't want you to see it until, frankly, you're an adult. And so for these reasons, I'm going to put some parental controls. Now, some of them you won't like because some of them it's to do with, you know, I mean, let's say time on the video and all that. But some of them you will be the better off for having them. So you're giving them buy-in. At that young age, they're listening to you.
Yeah.
If you follow me. And so
they haven't started rolling their eyes when you tell them things.
Get them then. Get them then.
Rina, for parents listening to this and the way you describe Chirp, I mean, it'll be music to their ears. Where can they find out more?
Not quite at market yet. We're on schedule to pilot in the wild with 500 users with one of the biggest telcos in Europe. I can't tell you who that is yet because we're under NDA, but at the end of this year.
Wow.
So we're going to be out to market in January 2026 and parents will be able to, but they'll need to buy a new device. That's the only thing. So we're trying to make it manageable and affordable for parents by working with device manufacturers to make sure they don't need to buy really expensive devices. But ultimately, unfortunately, if you're to deal with harmful user-generated content in messaging apps like WhatsApp, like Snapchat, it needs to be an embedded technology. And that's why nobody was doing it so far, because it's very hard.
All right. Well, listen, we wish you the absolute best of luck. And I think I speak on behalf of lots of parents when I say that. So keep an eye out and keep an ear out for news of Chirp with that pilot project and going to market early next year, January 2026. Rina Maycock is the founder of Chirp, and Stella O'Malley, the child psychologist and the author of Cotton Wool Kids.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.